This podcast is brought to you by The Natural Professional, dedicated to helping you create meaningful success on your terms. At naturalprofessional.com, find inspiration and tools through coaching, video tutorials, articles, and more. You're listening to Authentic Success. I'm Shawn Tuttle. Kicking off this interview series, I'm talking with Tammy Simon, founder of Sounds True, the multimedia publishing company dedicated to disseminating spiritual wisdom. The company has been nominated twice for Inc. 500's list of fastest growing companies, proving that conscious business can lead to crazy awesome success. I greatly appreciate your patience with the audio quality of this recording, which was recorded live at the Wisdom 2.0 conference.
Thank you so much taking the time to talk with me today. So let's start with success. Traditionally or culturally, we've ended up in this place where corporate success means dollars on bottom line. And then there's been this sort of evolution to the triple bottom line, people, planet, and profit. And from reading your website, it looks like you've taken a different slant on success. And so I would love to find out a little bit more about that.
Well, I'm very interested in success, and I think it's important that we define it for ourselves, both in terms of our individual life and then also in terms of our organizations. Mm-hmm. So starting with one's individual life, because I think that is where it begins, is what's our definition of success for ourselves in our life? Is it how many people recognize me? Is it how much money? Whatever. Is it something external? Or is it something internal? Is it a combination of both? And I would offer that it's up for each person to inquire into that very deeply, sincerely, and not to take anybody else's model of success. And that for some people it may include certain external markers, and that's just fine. Mm-hmm. And for some people maybe those aren't as important. But to first of all tell yourself the truth about what success is for you. So when I inquire into that, first of all, it's a changing target. It keeps growing and evolving as I keep.
I was just wondering that because you started Sounds True over 25 years ago.
Yeah.
So I'd be interested to know what your idea of success was then and what it is now.
You know, honestly, I don't even know if I could track it all that much. It's such a rich question, and I guess what I'm trying to emphasize here is that it's something that I think we can continually touch back into to have a compass for our lives, and it's important to retouch back into it. And as I ask myself what it is right now for me personally to be successful, it has something to do about how wide open my heart is and how much I can actually receive and connect with other people and how much I can be in an open space for something unprecedented and new to happen through me and how I can do it in creative collaboration with other people, with plenty of available resources for the creation. So it's something like that that's really important to me right now. And also having an opportunity to express myself. I think right now in my life is something that's important for me that maybe wasn't true when I started. Mm-hmm. And in terms of then applying that, okay, that's me personally. I look at that question. I feel into it. I see how it's changing. I tell myself the truth. Then there's my company. What does it take for my organization, this organization that I'm a part of, to be successful? And at Sounds True, it's always been about, and it's been pretty consistent actually, in terms of the organization, our ability to really fulfill our mission, which has to do with the depth and the transformative power of what we publish. A big part of our success has to do with the quality of our relationships. So the relationships with our customers, the relationships with our authors that we publish, the relationships with our vendors who manufacture our titles, all the outside companies we work with, mm-hmm. our partners, and of course the relationships among the employees with each other and the departments. And, you know, that's an ongoing big challenge for those relationships to be honest, healthy, and collaborative, and not divisive. And as the company has grown, we have 90 employees. There are subcultures in the business, which are different departments, and how those relationships can be really powerfully, beautifully collaborative, but also honor that there are real differences.
Right.
You know, not just try to mix it all in the mush, but try to understand what those tensions are. So that's a second big part of our success. And then obviously, in terms of our organization, in order to be successful, there has to be a certain amount of positive cash flow.
Sure.
Just has to happen, or else we can't grow, we can't innovate, and we won't be able to bring the voice of our organization forward to reach more and more people. So all of those elements are part of the success of the organization.
Mm. Excellent. And you know, the success markers that you mentioned for yourself now,
yeah.
From what I understand of your evolution through your business, you've been doing all of those.
Yeah.
As far as, let me say, one of the things that struck me about the timeline of the evolution of the business,
yeah,
over the last 25 years, it was like this regular stepping forward at what felt like a sustainable pace, and yet always very forward moving, incorporating in the new technologies of the time. So starting with going to a conference and recording the speaker, and then investing in a studio, and then putting it into retail. I guess at first it was through the catalog business, and you're just kind of step by step. And I was wondering if you would speak some to the growth of the business. I mean, it sounds like it's been very fluid and, I don't want to say methodical, but just had this nice sustainable pace. And did it go as smoothly as that in your experience?
Well, the word that people often use is that we've grown very organically.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's true. And I think one of the big drivers of a company's growth is whether or not you're taking in a large amount of investment capital or not. And that sounds true. We only took in investment dollars after the business was more than 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So for the whole first 20 years of the business, we were actually only able to grow a little bit each year because we only had a certain amount of available positive cash that we could invest in a new division or a new initiative. And each year, as the company was growing, I always decided to take whatever profits we had and put it back into the company. I didn't take it out for myself, but instead I was like, you know, I want this being to keep growing and prospering, and this is its fertilizer and sunlight, if you will, is to keep reinvesting. And so we would keep trying new things, new things, new things. And then when we reached a point where we saw that in order to grow to the next step, it would take a certain amount of money that we didn't have available, which was in order to really launch a full-scale digital initiative for the company,
mm-hmm,
that would allow us to be competitive in the online learning environment, as well as in the creation of mobile apps and taking all of our titles and making them into an integrated download store that would also sell physical products, etc.
Mm-hmm.
We realized that that's when we needed investment money, and we earmarked it very carefully for the digital initiative. So the reason I'm bringing that up is I think a company's growth has a lot to do with what they're doing with their money. Unless, of course, you know, you just get a product that just, you know, you have a kind of hockey stick experience and something just takes off, which has never really been the case, it sounds true. We've never had something that would qualify, I think, as a big-time bestseller release. Something that just the release of that one book or that one audio series totally changed the financial chemistry of the company. We've never had that. So that's part of being just the steady kind of drumbeat. And, you know, part of your question was, you know, I think there's this implication, has it been sort of just easy, steady, you know, fabulosity all the way? And the answer to that would be no, definitely not. You know, I think I had a fantasy, if you will, that it would work like that for the company for some reason. We had some, you know, halo or something. The business would just be, you know, if I was to show you the curve, it would just be, you know, a line that maybe started slow, but then gradually just went up and up and up and up and up, you know, like hiking up some tall mountain or something.
Right, go to some flat irons.
Yeah, something like that. And that hasn't been the curve of the business. You know, we have had a couple of downturns and times when we had to really radically readjust our approach and see that there were corrections that needed to be made in how we were approaching growing the business and changes in the marketplace. So it's been a steady attention towards being successful year after year, but the road has had its bumps and its dips.
Right. Yeah. Which brings me to, immediately calls up the question, how you made your decisions throughout. So I understand that meditation is a big part of your life now, and just from my own experience, and I'm very much still a novice meditator, and I absolutely see how it has made a change in how I relate with my business and my ability to make decisions and stay on task, stick with priorities, be clear on where I'm headed, and I know that's only going to increase with time. Has meditation always been a part of your path, and how would you say it has affected your decision-making throughout your journey?
Well, I started out before I even began Sounds True being a meditator. So when I started Sounds True, I was 22, and it really came out of the practice of meditation in that I wanted to give people tools and practices, not necessarily meditation per se, but approaches where they would have the ability to go deeply inside and look for guidance from an inner dimension of being versus being scattered and looking for answers either from other people or outside. And really, in terms of decision-making, I think that's the important thing. Not so much am I practicing meditation or yoga or anything for 15 or 20 minutes a day, but am I taking the time to go to the root of myself? What is really motivating me here? What is it that I actually want my life to be about, moment by moment? Legacy to be about at the end of my life? What is it that I actually uniquely am called to give? What is that? What, not what I think is the new fad or what will please, you know, some parental figure or something or other, or societal figure or anything, but what's the actual heart calling? And I think whatever it is, whether it's the practice of meditation or lying down in the meadow and staring at the sky, taking the time to take ourselves out of the kind of ping-pong ball moving world where we're using our rational mind to try to answer that question, and we're, you know, ping-ponging to the left, to the right, whatever, and then we're talking to other people and they give us their opinions, and then we read an industry magazine and that tells us what the latest trend is and blah blah blah. I actually don't think that that would ever satisfy me, because there is something underneath it that said, you know, go deeper, Tammy. Go deeper. Go to the root of the root and ask these questions and come up with what is actually genuinely moving through you that actually only you can do in a certain kind of way. And I believe that each person has that kind of calling inside of them. And it takes a tremendous amount of trust, because it might not look so terrific. You don't know how it's going to look.
Right.
And it might not make you that much money. And it might. We don't know. But there is an alignment that comes from that, and a fulfillment in being true to ourselves. And so to me, that's the important thing. And I think sometimes people think, well, you know, if I just meditate for 20 minutes a day, then, you know, I'll calm myself down and that will be the solution. And I actually think that it's more complicated than that. That meditation is a technique. It's one technique. The technique is not the important thing. It's what the technique can allow us to drop into. That's the important thing. And any place we drop into, any way that we have to drop into that deeply receptive, open, heart-based, feeling-based, because it's about the feelings. It's not about our thinking mind. It's about a felt frequency of electrical turn-on that we can really feel in our being. That's the important thing we have to access, and then that becomes our guiding light in our life.
Mm. Nice. I'm still at the point of 20 minutes a day. Just start the day off okay and stay relatively calm. One of the things that stood out to me when I listened to the interview that you did with Buddhist Geeks was your own relationship with teachers. And it sounds like you kind of went through looking for different ones, but you probably learned from each of them until you came into the situation. That are you still studying with
yes.
Reggie?
Yeah.
Ray?
Yeah.
Yeah. So being, like I said, a novice meditator, and I'm going to guess that a good portion of my audience is probably in that camp, or maybe haven't even started to meditate.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm just going to encourage them to take quiet time every day.
So I might say something about this.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, for me, I needed to go through some very intensive experiences with meditation, such that I could access in a short meditation period the depth that I discovered through those intensive experiences. And so I highly recommend to people that they do some kind of retreat experience. It could be a weekend, it could be a week, it could be a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not exaggerating. There's in the tradition that I've been trained in, there's a month-long datan that is recommended. Datan is just a word for a practice period of that time that happens between December 15th and January 15th each year. And I'm just using this as an example, which is taking an actual real chunk of time, maybe give it 10 days. When I originally was trained to meditate, it was in these 10-day training experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about that that drops you into a depth of being. Because often what happens when people learn to meditate through a book or an audio program, many of which are published by Soundstream, they begin with these 20-30-minute practice periods.
Right.
And they have a feeling that what they're really doing is they're just always working with the discursiveness of their mind. That's where it starts. Discursive,
mm-hmm.
You know, your mind's going, blah, 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 blah. Oh, I had a second where I was breathing for, you know, I followed my breath for 5 breaths. That's wonderful, and I feel a little calmer, and that's great. And that's what meditation is. Well, actually, that's not really what the fullness of what meditation can offer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that fullness needs to be discovered when we work with our mind for a while, over 2, 3, 4 days, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
At least this was my experience. Then you start finding these areas of major gaps in the thinking process.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually fall deeply, like falling into a crack in the world, into one of those gaps. And there's a new way of perceiving and being and receiving information that comes from that. And then once you discover how to fall into that cavernous gap, then you do your 20-minute practice. And you're like, oh, here's the gap. Bam, fall, I'm into it. Con, falling, falling, falling. Wow, I can rest here. I think whatever teacher, whatever, you know, just begin and let yourself explore some of the depths that
right, right. Okay, so then I want to take it to the practicalities. And you, on a regular day at the office, what are some of the challenges that you are faced with personally in interacting with employees or artists or teachers? And what practical, or how do you deal with that kind of thing practically?
Well, one of the things that I find is important for me is to make sure that I have enough time out of the office, and whether that's going on retreat, or taking some time off and being with my partner and being outside in nature. But I need to have enough time that my gas tank is full, if you will, so that as I'm handling what is a very busy day, meetings back to back, that I'm coming from a place that's highly resourced. And if that's not true, if I'm not starting in that space, it's much harder to apply a minute here, a minute there, and for it to work. Now, if I am in this full gas tank place at the beginning, and that involves things like having a real weekend where I'm not working all weekend, where I'm having, you know, what could be called a traditional Sabbath, and I'm having a chance to really be with my partner and be in my heart, spend lots of time with our fabulous Cocker's Manual and things like that. So I come in Monday and I'm not already three quarters empty, but and then there are things that can happen in the workday that I can touch into that just remind me of that big open space. So for example, one of the things we do in Sense Tree is we take a minute at the beginning of all our meetings just to be silent with each other. You know, it doesn't sound like that big a deal, but that 1 minute of dropping back in, as I mentioned, once you know how to drop in to that sense of true openness, you can do it, and a minute can actually serve you well. And I might have 10 meetings during the course of a day where I'm having that time. And then also we allow people to bring their dogs to work. And I mentioned the Cocker Spaniel accompanies me. And so it's also a wonderful opportunity to just break the speed of the day. Go outside, because your dog does need to go outside a couple times a day. And so it has many of the advantages of a smoking break without the cigarettes. But you're outside, you're under a tree, you're picking up some poop, and you're connecting to an animal. But, you know, I think the main thing isn't so much the techniques, and once again, it's kind of like meditation. Meditation's a technique. That's not really the main thing. And you can have these different techniques for pausing, whether it's taking your dog out, taking a minute. People have other techniques for taking a break during their day for 5 minutes to just, you know, lie down and stretch, or stand at your desk and stretch, or whatever. It's not really the technique. For me, the key thing is, what am I doing here? Am I wanting to really be present for every interaction to be one that's heart-based? Yes. But that is actually my definition of success, is that my interactions are heart-based. That I'm in that central place in my body, tender, open, available. That's the most important thing. When I know that, then that pervades my interactions with the people I'm working with. And I actually don't feel so drained, but I have the opportunity to be fed by these workplace interactions. Now, saying that, it's not that easy. And often what happens is, you know, I start out that way, and then by 4 or 5 in the afternoon, I still have a few more meetings, and I've run out of this spaciousness in me. And at that point, that's when I have to tell the truth. And I have to say to people, God, I'm feeling kind of, you know, a little stressed. Can we take longer than a minute? Can we take 5 minutes? Or I might need a 10-minute break. Can we start this meeting a little later? Because what I recognize is that if I'm not actually in that available place, then it does feel just like a grind.
That's such a wonderful reminder that it's a choice as a lifestyle. You know, it's sort of the practice, the ongoing practice throughout the day of, you know, where do I want to be and what do I need in order to be there. And so, you know, a technique, I get that the technique can be a little bit distracting, but taking that 1 minute as part of the culture of the company is a great reminder for everyone, oh yeah, that's what we're doing here.
It is.
And a lot of the people that I work with tend to be a little on the crisis management mode, and they're probably a little bit freaked out, and they are struggling for the quick fix, and, you know, what do I need to change in order for this to be different? And to understand that the fundamental lifestyle choice has nothing to do with your schedule and your productivity and your time management and, you know, sitting at your desk. I mean, clean desk is always great, but the general prevailing thought that, oh, well, once I do this, then I can take a break. Once I get this far, then I can go on vacation and take a break. Once I achieve this level of success in my business, then I'll turn to, you know, helping my community. So I love that reminder of coming back to, no, actually, all of those questions are tied up into right now who I am, who do I want to be for myself and in my business, and proceed from there.
Yeah. Well said.
For those folks who are interested in a little introduction to meditation, one of the resources available through Sounds True is on the withinsight.com, and that's a course on meditation. So that could be a basic introduction for people in any case.
Yeah, it's a free offering that Sounds True has created, and it introduces you to 21 different meditation practices that you can use. Each of them are under 20 minutes. So there's a mantra meditation practice, there's a meditation practice for working with physical pain, for calming the thinking mind, for just being and resting in space. So there's a whole collection of 21 different practices from different teachers, and it's Sounds True's free offering just to introduce people to different approaches.
Which I think is also wonderful to let people know that there are different benefits to different types of meditations.
Yeah, and I think the key is that people find something that is a doorway for them.
Right.
If it's chanting a sound or a vowel that and you're like, oh, I love the feeling of making sound and what that feels like in my body, that's for me, great.
Mm-hmm.
Or you may have the response, that's the last thing in the world I ever want to do is to hear a vowel sound come out of my, you know, bedroom in the morning. Like, that's just not going to happen. It may be something else that draws you in. It doesn't matter.
Right.
And I think the key is that we find what's resonant for us and we dive into it.
Great. Any final words you'd like to pass on to our listeners?
Well, you know, we talked about how it's not about a behavioral shift only, like scheduling. But at the same time, I do think that people making a decision to take the space for themselves is so critical. Anything where you say, you know, my relationship with myself is a very, very high priority. It's the highest priority in my life. I prioritize my relationship with my work, with my partner, with my children, you know, with so many other things. But what about my relationship with myself? And I think when we actually give that its due, its time and space, then a lot of these other shifts in our life come from that, when that relationship is truly honored.
Mm. Beautiful. Thank you, Tammy.
Okay, thank you.
An absolute pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, you too. Good luck with everything.